By the way, we're just doing a little math here. So the White Sox are 39-120. How about that? They swept the Angels here in town. I think for some weird reason, there's a lot of pride on the South Side this week because the White Sox did not cave when everybody was showing up watching them to hit 121 losses. So now they're on the road tonight and then Saturday and Sunday day games in Detroit against a team that's really going to try hard to win because Detroit wants to be in the playoffs. So we will see how the White Sox do. But I think there would be a certain loveliness to the idea that the White Sox finish the season at 120 rather than 121. That's not exactly a winning season, but if you wanted to hang your hat on something, a little personal pride that we didn't give up at the end, we did not want that record, even if the fans did, that would be one way to do it. Going to be tougher to do on the road, but White Sox won the last three, and that's been kind of fun. I've been thinking about it for a variety of reasons, besides the obvious, but the fact that Sam Anderson was on with us earlier in the week, the New York Times Sunday Magazine writer who has been following them. He's been to their last 20 games, chronicling what many people are anxious to see and say was the worst team in the history of the game. And so far, they haven't delivered. So every day, he's got to go to another game, got to go to another game. It's 12-12 now. Tom Fortino is the founder and principal at the Alpha Wealth Group and the host of our The Alpha Wealth Hour with Tom Fortino. Hi, Tom. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing great today. How you doing, John?
Let's go to a White Sox game. You want to do a road trip with me, go up to Detroit?
Well, you know, I'm originally from Michigan. I'm sorry. I'm a Tigers fan.
Are you really? Like, is that your baseball team?
Yeah, I'm still a Detroit guy. I shouldn't mention the Red Wings, but it's Red Wings, Lions, Tigers.
No kidding. I mean, so you're all into that. So, do you follow? Yeah. So, if it's Bears and Lions, you're rooting for Detroit, huh?
Can I say that? Yeah.
I think you can. Well, first of all, nobody's rooting for everybody. Well, it's very easy to root against the Bears right now. They deserve all of the misery they're experiencing.
Well, you know, I hope the Bears come through. I hope the quarterback works out this year. You know, I hope for all those things. But, you know, if any team is suffering, I used to tell Cubs fans years ago when they complained, I said, look, I'm a Lions fan. Don't talk to me about this. So
everybody has their day. You know, you're on the top and then you're on. It's kind of like the stock market, he said, segueing to your area of expertise. Sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down. It's up a lot right now. Is this all because of the Fed or what's going on here, Tom?
Well, you know, it's a combination of things. If you've seen China's come out and they've said they're going to start some liquidity measures, they may even, you know, send out vouchers. They're talking about cutting rates. So, and I think the market has had a little bounce back here. You've seen with the AI is kind of making a comeback. Micron Technologies came out. They had some good earnings. So it's a combination of things. And, of course, the PCE. GDP came out yesterday. Again, a good read, 3%. That was the final read for the quarter. And the PC came out today at 2.2, which, you know, the target's 2.0. So those are good things. Doesn't mean there's not headwinds, but so again, a combination of things, and it's the momentum. It's the market's moving, so you can't fight the tape or the Fed.
Yeah, right. I wonder what you make of what Terry Savage said the other day, since people who might be checking their account, retirement accounts are seeing really good numbers right now. Depending on where you are, maybe you ought to just get off this train and take some cash off the table. What do you make of that strategy right now?
Well, you know, I get what she's saying. There's some wisdom there in the sense that, you know, it's just like your winnings, you kind of take some off the side. You may be up. So, for example, if you're saying you have a 60-40 portfolio, 60% has it been stocks, they may now be overweighted. So you can kind of trim those holdings and maybe go a little more and then put that to cash. You just, again, it depends on the amount. Just be careful. But those are some you got to have a strategy, kind of an just like when you buy a stock, okay, are you going to hold it for a long time or is there a trading? You know, you don't want to watch it go up and then come all the way back down. So there's always, okay, if you raise cash, what's the next move?
And so well, we I thought you were also, strategy there. And I also figure you would say if you're going to sell something, make sure you do it in a way that is not a taxable event, right?
Very good point. Yes, if you're looking at, or at least be aware of it, you don't want to be surprised on January, you get a 1099 and all of a sudden you're saying, what happened? What tax? If you make these moves in an IRA or a Roth, it is a non-taxable event because it's in a deferred or tax-free account. After-tax accounts, regular brokerage accounts, individual or joint accounts, yeah, you could create a capital gains tax.
Well, I wonder what the best strategy is. I mean, just the way you imagine if you're going to do a Roth or a traditional IRA, when do you want to pay the taxes? I wonder if you want to pay the taxes now or keep it in that account and pay them later.
Well, if you're making trades inside those accounts and you're raising cash in an IRA or a Roth, there will be no tax consequence to that. And the other thing I would mention on the after-tax accounts, just a regular brokerage account, those you pay on the gain. So just to be clear, so if it's up, 50%, you're going to pay 15%. Again, the capital gains, we're not getting too deep in this. Typically, it's 15%. It could be zero. But if it's 15%, it's 15% of whatever your gain is. So if you have a $10,000 gain, you're not going to pay on $10,000. You're going to pay 15. Your tax bill will be 15% of that.
Right. So it's not the total value of the account, but rather just the appreciation.
And correct.
So that's
exactly. Percentage of the appreciation. Yep.
Understood. Yep. Okay, but then any other sort of tax planning tips as we get close to the end of the year? What else are you thinking about these days?
Well, one thing to keep in mind is, we have the end of the year that's kind of a deadline to do certain things. If that date comes and goes, you've lost a year potentially of making some moves. Moreover, and in the second place, as I like to say sometimes, the Tax Cut and Job Act right now is expiring after 2025. So you have 2024 and 2025 in these lower tax brackets. So there may be some opportunities to do Roth conversions. Again, you have till December 31st. For those that participate in a 401k plan, you have until December 31st to max those out. Again, if you do not take advantage of that, you potentially lost a year. So then there's a couple other things, but those are things we just want to be aware of and take advantage of it before the end of the year, because as we know, we're in October next week.
How much money can you contribute per year into those accounts?
The 401k is, if you're age 50 or over, you can do $30,500. If you are under 50, it's $23,500. But I would tell anyone who's a participant in a 401k, call your providers today or Monday and say, what am I contributing? You can accelerate your payment. So, for example, if they say, well, you put in $10,000 so far, you can say, okay, I want to increase my contributions, double them for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
So you can get more money into that plan, and you can maybe switch it to a Roth too.
What's the catch up? What's the catch up provision?
Well, that's that difference between the 23.5 and the 30,500. So, again, if you're 50 or over, that catch-up contribution is that difference. So it's the 7,000 extra you can put in. That's what they deem the catch-up. And it's true on an IRA, 7,000 if you're under 50, 8,000 if you're 50 or older. That's the catch-up is the 1,000.
Tom Fortino's on the line, the founder and principal at the Alpha Wealth Group. You can listen for his advice Sunday mornings at 7 on WGN on the Alpha Wealth Hour. I also wanted to ask you a little bit about Social Security, because we had the commissioner on with Terry Savage this week, and there were a couple of things that came up in that conversation. Let's catch up on your thoughts on that in a minute.
Okay.
It's 12:19, and this is WGN. Martin O'Malley was on with us the other day, Tom Fortino, the Social Security Administrator, and was just talking about ways to keep it solvent. He wanted to remind our listeners, among other things, that it's not going to, quote-unquote, run out, but that bulge of money they had for baby boomers is going down, and Congress is going to need to at some point address this. But at least his hot take on it was that you're not going to get your money. But at some point, it's possible that the Social Security payments would be reduced if we don't address it. So I don't know if we're up or down on that. It sounds like I'm saying that he said both. One solution that we talked about was simply raising the ceiling after which contributions quit. It's like, what did he say, $168,000? And after that, you don't pay Social Security, you get a raise. He said maybe that should raise. And there's a bill in Congress to raise it up to $400,000 you'll pay Social Security taxes on. And what's your thought about all of that?
Well, there definitely is a concern, and for lack of a better word, a conundrum, because, you know, as you said, these baby boomers, this is the peak 65. I'm sure you heard that term, 11,000 baby boomers a day turning 65. And what is the sustainability and viability of Social Security? And so, you know, it's tough with the taxes. It's hard to, I hopefully there's some way we can figure a way to bolster Social Security. I've heard different sides of this that it's not going to run out because, keep in mind, money is continuously coming into the being paid in Social Security. I think they bring in about $1 trillion a year. I know that's crazy when you start talking these numbers. The problem is they're getting to a point where they're paying out more than they're bringing in. I really struggle with the whole tax part of it because maybe they're going to do some means testing on the back end.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's a great answer for this. I wish I had one.
I get that. A means testing meaning that maybe you're not going to get your money back or as much money back if in retirement you're earning a lot of money. You don't need Social Security. Is that what that means, Tom?
That's part of it. And the other thing is, I mean, these are all these small things. Number one, they could increase what's called the full retirement age, or the age with which you can take Social Security. That's one other thing that they could do. The other thing they could do, again, it's a combination of things. Right now, depending on your income, up to 85% of your Social Security is taxed, not 100%. Doesn't matter what your income is. It is capped at 85%. So what they could do is say, we're going to now potentially tax 100% of your Social Security benefit if your income is a certain level. We'll take that cap off. So I think there's a combination of things they could potentially do that would be a little better. We'll see, but more than likely, they're going to have to do something.
Yeah, none of those are popular, and politicians like to be popular. I wonder if they would just minimize each year the payout. What's the COLA going to be on Social Security this year?
Well, this year they're estimating, and this comes out every October, they have a different factor than the CPI and the PCE. There's a factor they use to determine, and it's an inflation factor still, a calculation. They anticipate it's going to be 2.5%. Last year, I think it was 3.2%, and in 2023, it was 8.7%. And we're not going to hopefully see those again, but you will see. So, for example, if you have a $2,000 a month benefit, you may see an increase of $50 a month, $60 or maybe more.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bad sign if your COLA is 8.7%. That's not a good thing. All that tells you is how much
it's bad news.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tom's going to talk more about this sort of stuff Sunday morning at 7 on the Alpha Wealth Hour. That's Tom Fortino from the Alpha Wealth Group. Okay, Tom. Thank you, sir.
All right, great. Hey, have a great weekend, John.
1227 WGN Radio News is next. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for dialing us in. We're WGN Radio. I'm John Williams. Ted Rossman is a senior industry analyst at Bankrate who is looking at your unused gift cards. How often do we have those, Ted? Welcome back.
Thanks for having me. More than 4 in 10 of us, 43%, have at least one unused gift card. And among these people, the average amount per person is $244. We're talking real money here, so that's the homework assignment. Find and use your unused gift cards. Maybe they're hiding in a junk drawer or in the back of your wallet or purse. Find and use these gift cards because they represent real money.
I wonder if those eventually, like, okay, that may be 43% of us. I wonder how many of those cards will never get used, how many of them will be lost and be the, I guess, good fortune of the card issuer, right?
Yeah, this adds up to $27 billion nationwide. Some big retailers like Starbucks and Walmart have more than $1 billion of unused gift cards on their books. We found that about a third of us have lost money at some point because of a gift card misstep. 20% have let one expire. most gift cards no longer expire, so at least we can put that mostly in the rearview mirror. But 17% have lost a gift card, 12% had a store go out of business before they could use the gift card. There are definitely some things that can go wrong, and inflation eats into the value too. So I would really say the best advice is use it sooner, not later.
You know what happens though? Sometimes somebody gives you a $25 gift card, and the place you're going to go will probably cost you $75. So you got to spend $50 to save $25, and maybe you don't want to do that. You know, you understand the math I'm doing there, right?
That's a good point. Yeah. You know, sometimes people hear this research and they say, well, does that mean we don't like gift cards anymore? I believe that we do. The National Retail Federation says that gift cards were the second most popular holiday gift last year behind clothing. But you're right. There are some things we can do both on the giver and the receiver side. You know, we talked about as the receiver, you ought to use these. Even if you don't like the store, maybe there's someone on your holiday gift list who would benefit, or you can sell it on a site like Card Cash and get 70 or 80% of what it's worth. But on the giver side, it's important to put some thought into it. That is impractical if you give somebody like a $10 gift card to an expensive steakhouse or jewelry store. You want to be targeted about a store they like, something they can use, you know, a restaurant that's close by, not one that's going to require them to travel an hour. It makes sense to put some thought into what you're giving.
Card Cash is a site. What do I type in? The serial number on the gift card and they send me a check? How does that work?
That's right. Yeah, sites like Card Cash and Raise would be another example. They're basically gift card marketplaces, and it's really an arbitrage play. They might buy a $100 gift card from somebody for $70 and then sell it to somebody else for $90. So it can actually be a win-win all around. I've used some of these resale sites myself. The one drawback is that you are taking a bit of a haircut on the value. You're not going to get 100 cents on the dollar. So if you can, use it for yourself, or you know, with the holidays coming up, be intentional about, hey, it's not a store I like, but maybe my mom would like a Christmas gift from there, or someone else on your gift list. But as a fallback, it's better to sell it than to have it gathering dust in your junk drawer.
So you are okay with re-gifting gift cards?
I am, yeah. I think that, you know, your recipient may be none the wiser, but they can benefit from it. You could buy merchandise with the card or even give the card itself. A good tip when you have those weird remainders is that a lot of gift cards are reloadable nowadays. So maybe you used part of it and you have like $8 left or something. You could actually load that up to a more socially acceptable amount and give that as a gift card as well if you're not sure what to do with some of the weird remainders lying around.
You know, in the Chicago area, what a lot of restaurants do now is, especially now as we're getting close to the holidays, they'll have promotions where you can buy $100 worth of gift cards, and maybe you're going to give those away, whatever, but then they will include with that $25 of bonus cards, 25%, and some of them are 50%. There's a place Brenda and I like to go to, and we buy $100 of gift cards, and then they give us $150 of gift cards for our $100, and then we just keep them. I mean, there's no reason not to use them yourself or give them away, but it's just 50 cents on the dollar, and some of the, and it's not uncommon to find 25%.
That's a great tip. Yeah, that's almost like a 401k match, but for gift cards. I've heard of that from some national chains too, like sometimes Subway and Panera and others will run those promotions. It fits into a theme that we see around the holidays, which is people treating themselves. You know, you also see it on something like Amazon Prime Day, where maybe you buy some holiday gifts, but you also treat yourself. Yeah, you could absolutely use that to your advantage, whether you keep or give away the bonus funds.
Ted, you also did a demographic breakdown on gift cards. What did that reveal?
We found that millennials are the biggest offenders here. They have an average of $332 per person in unused gift cards. That's ahead of Gen X at $255, Boomers at $227, and Gen Z at $142. All of these numbers have risen in recent years. The average amount of unused gift card value now is $244. 3 years ago, it was 116. I find it very strange that in this time of high inflation and high interest rates, why are so many people letting this gift card value go unused. I'm surprised we're going in the wrong direction here. I'd love to see people spend down these balances because it's real money. And you could say the same thing about your airline miles and hotel points and credit card rewards. It all adds up.
Well, it's not like those credit card points don't go unused. I mean, maybe you'll sit on them for a couple of years and let it build up a lot, but I don't know that that's the same thing, is it?
It depends. You know, we found that about a quarter of rewards credit card holders didn't redeem any rewards over the past year. For something like a cash back card, I would say redeem quickly. You know, monthly is often when those points are doled out. I don't really see a need to hold on to those for longer. You might want to save up your airline miles up to a certain threshold. You know, if you're trying to save for that first class or business class flight to Europe or something. But don't hoard for hoarding's sake. It is often better to get the value. Sometimes these programs change their rules too, and it's often not in the consumer's favor. So it's usually better to cash in when you can.
I understand why people don't, because they wait until it gets to be a lot. It's sort of like a Christmas club account where you're not making any interest, but it's a way to save money. But if you're paying 22% on a credit card or store card somewhere, you might as well whittle away with it every month. Just take that money out and spend it rather than use your credit card, right?
Yeah, and really, if you have credit card debt, my advice would be don't chase rewards, prioritize the interest rate. There are some 0% balance transfer cards like the Wells Fargo Reflect and Citi Simplicity that don't have rewards, but they have generous 0% promotions that last up to 21 months. That's better than paying, you know, 20 or 25% interest just to get a couple points in cash back. But everybody's looking for ways to save around the holidays, and a lot of people have unused value, whether that's, you know, airline miles, credit card rewards, gift cards. I could tell you, we started doing similar projects a few years ago, and I thought, oh, I don't have any unused gift cards. And I was actually really embarrassed. I looked around, and I had way more than I thought I did. So, you know, I've tried to be more intentional about it, but it's good advice for everybody to find those old gift cards.
Well, that's it. Find them, because I think it's out of sight, out of mind. We have some in a drawer. I may have one in my wallet. I think I've got one in the little cubby in my car. And if it's not top of mind, you just never use them. I don't think that's an uncommon thing.
It's very true. Yeah, an object in motion stays in motion. And especially with the holidays coming up, be intentional. You know, I would even suggest putting reminders in your calendar that even if you're not going to use it right now, maybe it's a restaurant gift card you can use for an upcoming date night or family night out or someone's birthday gift or a Christmas gift. It really does pay to be intentional about it.
You can read more about this at Bankrate.com. Ted Rossman is a senior industry analyst. Nice to talk to you today, Ted.
Same here. Thanks for having me.
Jeff Rosati's on the line, the CFO at Rosati's Pizza, and they are celebrating an anniversary, a 60-year anniversary with a really fun giveaway. Hey, Jeff, you're on WGN's Wintrust Business Lunch. How are you?
Hi, John. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going well. Tell me about Rosati's. Who are you guys?
Okay, well, you know, pizza place that's been around for 60 years now. Started in 1964, just a mom and pop pizza place, started by my uncles in Mount Prospect, and pretty much grew from there through just family members opening restaurants and eventually franchising.
What was the secret? Well, I know that Sam was all about fresh ingredients, but was there a special sauce, or what was it that propelled this business?
That's still it. I mean, it's just quality items that we, you know, take a lot of time researching. I mean, I was just out in California last month looking at the tomato crop, you know,
really?
In the fields. Yeah, and it's, you know, you learn a lot about how things are made and just keeping everything fresh. And pretty much we stuck to tradition from 1964. We don't do things a lot different. It's pretty much the same procedure.
So you go out there to look at the tomatoes and buy from, or at least appreciate what you're going to get. Is that the idea?
Sure. We look at, you know, first of all, field tomatoes, fresh. You know, they're from the fields, and they're processed within like 4 to 6 hours. So you really capture that and that in a really good taste. Spice it in the store. Yeah, I mean, it's... you know, we were in the field eating it just right, the raw tomato, and it was just amazing how good they are.
So now how many states is Rosati's in now?
Oh, we're in about 18. Yeah. We're from California to North Carolina, Florida to Minnesota, Texas. Yeah.
You know, it's a lot when the guy says about. About 18.
Can't keep up.
Well, you have a new one opening up in Waukegan, right?
Yeah, we're opening everywhere. Actually, the next one that I've got is St. Augustine, Florida.
I'm not going to go to that one. I want to go to one around here.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Well, then go ahead and check that out. Yes. Yeah.
So tell me about this promotion. So 60 years ago is 1964. Yeah. So you guys are giving away a 64 Chevy Impala.
Yeah. Yeah, that we thought about doing something big for the 60th. I mean, it's a big anniversary, and we sat around saying, "What can we give away? Do we give away food? Do we give away a vacation?" And you know, pizza is a delivery business. We're like, "What about a car? Let's give away a car. Everyone likes a, you know, a game show. The best prize is you want a new car." So we're like, "Let's get a car," and then we're like, "Well, we'll give them a really old car, 1964 car to commemorate when we opened." And so then we started looking at, well, which one? We definitely wanted an American classic. And the Impala has, you know, it's been in some music songs and, you know, it has a following. So we said, hey, that's perfect. It was your average car, 1964. And then we just set out looking for one.
So is this kind of cleaned up a little bit, or has it got rust spots?
Yeah. It's in really good shape. and what's cool about it, it has, you know, the original engine, you know, original rear end, you know, pretty much everything's original. The radiator's new and the radio's new. But other than that, it's pretty original. You sit in it and it's stepping back in time. Cars have come a long way. I mean, it doesn't have air conditioning. It doesn't have power steering.
No, you don't want that.
Power brakes.
No.
And it's a four speed. So yeah, no, I've driven it. It's really fun.
You've got 1964 menu pricing too through October. If I want to register to win, how do I do that? How do I sign up?
Just go to one of our participating locations. We've got a QR code usually in the lobby on a poster. Just, you know, click on it with your phone. It brings you to the site. You put in your information. I actually haven't done it myself because I'm not eligible, but
it would look really bad if you won, Jeff. I'm just saying.
Oh, I wish I could.
Yeah. All right. We'll swing by one of the restaurants, hit the QR code, and register to win a 64 Chevy Impala celebrating 60 years with Rosati's in Chicagoland and about 18 states. Jeff Rosati, right. Congratulations. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks a lot.